And welcome back to Coast, Archbishop Ron Feilin right back with us. His book is called Exorcist Secret Journal, Concealed Cases of Diabolical Activities and Demonic Possession. Guess what we're going to talk about when we come back on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you thought the Ouija board segment was scary, wait till you hear the next couple hours. A Catholic priest for almost 40 years, Archbishop Ron Feilin Wright, has been involved in the ministry called exorcism. He was trained by many exorcists over the years who were his mentors and former bishops. He has established an order of exorcists called the Sacred Order of St. Michael the Archangel, and he and the members of the order are available by appointment for demonic investigations, exorcisms, house blessings, and other religious rituals. Archbishop Ron Feilin Wright, Archbishop, welcome back to the program. We missed you.
Thank you, George. Thank you for having me.
And the book just came out about a month or so ago, didn't it? Exorcist Secret Journal?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, just most recently, actually. I've been holding on to this because these are my actual secret notes that I've been keeping over the years.
Oh, my gosh.
As you probably know, the ritual of exorcism and everything tied to it is highly confidential. Nothing is supposed to be revealed in any detail whatsoever. That's probably one of the main reasons why you don't see actual documentaries actually showing the actual ritual, because everything is highly confidential.
What we do is we see recreations and things like that.
That's correct. And even then, they're only touching the surface, because if anyone really, truly been involved in any form of exorcism or been in the actual ritual room, it would probably terrify them to a point where it would leave a permanent mark and they'd be traumatized for the rest of their life, because seeing something that you've never seen before or understand can be very shocking.
When you first became a priest, did you enter the priesthood thinking you were going to be conducting exorcisms?
No, that was the last thing on my mind. In fact, this all happened. It all started at, it was a supernatural event that took place in my life many years ago. I was a youngster, and I could go into the story if you like.
Yeah, I'd love to hear it. Go ahead.
Okay. This was actually what I refer to as a divine vision. I was in the shower. I was like maybe 11, 12 years old. I'm in the shower, and all of a sudden, a bright light just beamed right into the bathroom, and it came through the window, and it was so blinding that I closed my eyes for that 1 second, and that's when I saw myself in a Roman collar, in a black suit, and working in some capacity with the church. Now, understand, I didn't even know what an exorcist was or even exorcism at the time. I was only 11 or 12. But I did have this clear vision of seeing myself much older and sometime in the future being involved in the church as a priest.
Well, that's phenomenal. When this happened to you, was it like an epiphany?
It was, actually. It molded my entire inner being in regards to the path that I would be led on. I was actually guided, and I think everything is already predestined anyway. But at that particular time, I started noticing things that I just took for granted. And then this is, again, I was a young child, and yet I'm noticing things that I was totally oblivious to at that time in my life. And as I kept growing, other things started coming into play, and these supernatural events became more and more current, especially when I entered the ministry.
Once you did that, to become a priest, how soon did you then become an exorcist?
Well, to be an exorcist, you have to first have a divine calling. My calling was when I was 11 or 12 years old. At that time, if you follow your path, then you're involved in the church, then you go through theological training, and then at that point, that would lead to ordination. And in my case, it's holy orders, which is ordination of the priesthood. And then at that time, you would express your interest to the jurisdictional bishop as to your interest in a certain ministry. In my case, it was the ministry of exorcism. And at that point, the jurisdictional bishop would assign you to a mentor, would be a much older man who is who's an experienced exorcist, and who would take you under their wing, basically as their assistant. And my training was 4 years as the assistant to the exorcist. And at that point, when my mentor felt I was ready, then at that point, I was appointed as the jurisdictional exorcist for that jurisdiction.
Is there an exorcist in every archdiocese?
No.
There's not?
No. No. And as a result, there are many different types of people who claim to be exorcists. And unfortunately, unless you have a divine calling, whatever you do as an exorcist without that calling, you would not be successful in regards to actually performing an exorcism.
Now, we hear a lot of stories of Catholic priests being exorcists, but we don't hear many stories of rabbis being exorcists, ministers being exorcists, Presbyterians or Baptists. Why is that?
It's a good question, but every denomination has some form of a person who was appointed to be the medicine man or the exorcist for the group. The rabbis, they do have people who are appointed to do just this in terms of exorcisms. There are many different denominations that actually have a ministry of deliverance, which is a form of exorcism. And so as a result, it's been around for a very long time, almost 2,000 years.
How many exorcists within the Catholic Church, the entire church?
I could tell you that within my jurisdiction, which covers 24 countries, we have just over 1,000. Understand each of these individuals were trained with a mentor who had approved them to be appointed as an exorcist for that jurisdiction. In the 24 countries, we have at least 1,000. I'm saying within, I've been doing this for almost 42 years. And which is a long time.
It is a long time.
We have our active clergy that are actually have their ministries, and within their ministries they have a ministry of exorcism, which caters to the parishioners of their particular jurisdiction.
It's an amazing field that you are in. Have you ever been attacked yourself by a demon?
Yes. The most severe case that I could remember, which was not too long ago, was in 2013. I was performing a ritual. This was after we'd done the assessment, we've done the all the other steps that are involved before we even do an actual ritual. Once we do all those steps, which I can go into perhaps later, Then we would do a ritual. I was in the middle of a ritual, and I was struck 3 times on my left side. It felt like an invisible 2x4 being slammed to my left side. At the time, to make a long story short, we finished the ritual. I transported myself to my home, and at that point, I was at shortness of breath. I saw my family physician. He suggested I have an X-ray and an actual CAT scan done, which I did. And the following day, he called me and said, "You need to go to the emergency room and get admitted immediately," which I did. And I was in the hospital for 30 days. I was in the critical care unit. And what happened was I had a 2-liter sack of blood wrapped around my heart. On my left side.
That could have killed you.
Yeah, exactly. I was, as I said, I was in the intensive care unit, and I was in isolation because they couldn't understand how I succumbed to this condition. And so as a result, they were throwing all types of tests to try to figure out how to actually diagnose this particular condition. And so, to make a long story short, the CDC even got involved, and as a result, they came down. They had to make sure, make an evaluation, make sure this wasn't a contagious disease. I was in isolation for 30 days, and after three procedures, got three operations. The one, the removal of the sac blood I had wrapped around my heart. Then they also did a cleansing. Some type of cleansing procedure for your lungs and other things that were related to that, which was quite interesting.
Archbishop, let's say 10 people who request exorcists to cleanse them, 10 people, how many do you think are truly possessed? And what percent do you think might be mentally ill of 10?
To be honest, 10 is actually a very low number. If we're going to say a number, let's use 1,000.
Okay.
Out of 1,000 people who request our services, and after we assess them, I would say probably, honestly, there might be maybe a 6% chance of actual genuine demonic activity, some kind of demonic involvement. In regards to possession, maybe even lower than that, maybe more to 3%.
Wow. So a high 90%, then there's something else medically wrong with the person or mentally wrong?
Yes, they could have, they could have mental issues. Of course, they could also have physical issues. There are a lot of things that could actually mimic possession. And depending on the psychological point of view in regards to the individual, there could be a chemical imbalance, and if that be the case, then there's other things that need to be done. Part of our process is the assessment of the actual individual. We not only investigate the individual, but we also require of them medical and psychological reports. So we have three psychiatrists in our organization, and so when the assessment reports come in, they also are accompanied by the psychological and physical reports. Those reports are given to our physicians. Our psychiatrists will make an evaluation based on what they see, and if there's anything that that really needs to have our attention, they would let us know, and they'll give us their recommendations. At that point, I look at that information. I also look at the actual report that's submitted by the investigators. Now, investigators are trained for assessments. What they do basically is they review the individual. They ask them a series of questions which are found in our questionnaires. We have a clinical questionnaire that we actually have, and each lead investigator will have and will direct these questions to the victim or the person who is claiming to have symptoms of demonic possession or other issues. And so once we have that outline, which is in three different sections, the questionnaire covers the mental changes of the affected person, the physical changes affecting the person, and the last section would be the outward manifestations. This would be things that you could witness, see, and you could you could see that this is part of the collection of physical evidence that we could put together in the assessment report and then present it as the final report. Then, of course, we make our decision after we receive the recommendations from the physicians. And then, of course, the any evidence, physical evidence, which would also include pictures, videos, things of this nature. Also testimonies from, let's say, the neighbors. Let's say anyone in the household, per se, that may have something or some kind of input to add to the area of physical evidence. Once we have all that information, then we can make a proper assessment.
How do you tell the 94% that they're mentally ill?
We use the questionnaire, which actually is more of a clinical form. It has 60 questions. It talks about the mental changes in the affected person. We actually ask the individual a series of questions. And once these questions are written down, then the investigator would go to the next section, which is the physical changes. And a lot of this will come out in their health physical exam reports. But we can also see if there are any other physical signs where the person may demonstrating some type of outward manifestations that would affect not only their appearance, but maybe the way they articulate and certain other things within their immediate environment.
If a person is possessed, truly demonically possessed, this 3 to 6%, what's happening to them? How did this happen?
It's very interesting. In most cases, they would have to have, at one point in their life, invite some darkness into their life. It all has to do with lifestyle and other intent that the people make, their intentions. If they are the type of person who wants to experiment, I know the first part of your program was about Ouija boards.
Right.
Ouija boards are known to be a tool that could perhaps bring a demon into your space. But the reality, in my personal opinion, is that the Ouija board is just a game. What really happens is the intent of the person who's using the Ouija board. For that matter, that person could be using cards or crystals or other means to focus and, with their intent, contact anything on the other side in regards to the darkness. And every demon is just waiting for someone to do just that. When that happens, then something happens. They will either invite the dark entity within their space, and the person might experience what's referred to as a demonic infestation. And this could take place in their house, as they're doing the actual ceremony, and then that would be the aftermath. Of course, demonic oppression is another form of attack that could occur, and this is when the demonic plants a seed in one's mind. And the person thinks that it's actually their own idea in regards to their bad behavior, not knowing or not even being aware that the seed was planted by a demonic influence. And when that happens, all kinds of things could happen. Demonic possession is very rare, but when it happens and when it's genuine, you will know it, because the individual will demonstrate unbelievable supernatural things, mm-hmm. such as able to not only tell you who they are, tell you who you are, and also your entire experience, immediate experience, but they will also basically get into your memories, mind, and will tell you things about yourself where they would have no way of knowing. There are so many different signs, even levitation, and this has happened in many cases when we're talking about genuine cases of demonic possession. This has actually happened, where an individual can literally be levitated off the bed, off the mattress, off the floor, and literally bodily elevated straight up in the air. It's just amazing.
What has been the success rate of exorcisms?
The success rate, again, for the genuine ritual of demonic possession, would be pretty close to about 70%, maybe 80%.
That's pretty high. Stay with us, Archbishop. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back and talk more on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. We are back with Archbishop Ron Feil Enright, his book, Exorcist Secret Journal. It's available at definitely Amazon. How about bookstores, Archbishop?
It will be sometime this year. It's kind of a slow process for me. I've been working on this book for the past, 40 years. And as a result, it's been a really, I had a really hard time in terms of trying to make a decision as to whether or not I should release it because of some of the details of the book.
I understand. It's kind of controversial, too, isn't it?
I'm getting a lot of criticism from clergy and colleagues who have been chastising me, if you will, and stating that, you know, these facts and this information should not be released to the public. But, you know, my response is, of course, is I never use names. I never even indicate cities or countries or anything in that nature. And so, you know, I try to make it as anonymous as possible. So I try not to get any person or in terms of identity available to anyone. It's everything is still confidential.
When you're talking, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I'm just saying only the details are revealed in regards to what the case and where mm-hmm. the case went and so on.
When you were talking of the 70-80% success rate, how long does it take for a successful exorcism to occur?
Some cases may take a week, maybe a little under, maybe a little over a year.
Wow.
It depends on, and if it's like over a year, we're talking about revisiting that individual like every couple of times a week and performing the ritual over and over and over again. There is an issue when it comes to a multiple demonic possession, which can happen, and which means that we have to continue the ritual over and over again. Part of our ritual is to identify. First, we ask the demon how long he plans to be there, and then we try to get information in regards to his identity. We try to get a name, and then even then, the name might be false. And if that be the case, which has happened, then, of course, we have to repeat the whole ritual. The ritual itself is a series of prayers that are said in a repetitious fashion. And it's a battle.
Does the person who is possessed know they're possessed?
It's interesting. Most people that have like a demonic oppression are not even aware that they've been affected by the darkness. But people who are possessed, in most cases, have no idea until they're told after the actual ritual itself. The reason being is that we have this defense mechanism in our brain which represses any type of traumatic, frightening information that we should happen to experience in life. And as a result, it's embedded deep in our subconscious. So we are not even aware that we're going through these things. So to answer your question, most people never remember anything unless they are maybe under hypnosis. Maybe they're reminded of certain facts that took place during the episode of this type of thing.
Do they kind of black out in their physical life and they just have lost mental control?
I believe that they are consciously aware of everything that's going on, but they're like in the back seat. They cannot do anything. It's like they have full paralysis. They have no say-so in regards to what is happening to their body and also the outward manifestations that would be actually the personality of the demon himself.
Has anyone ever died from being possessed demonically?
Unfortunately, yes.
Oh, my gosh.
Of course, you probably never hear about these cases, but yes, sometimes the victim, sometimes even some of the family members who are present during the ritual.
What have they done? What kills them? Heart attacks or things like that?
Heart attacks, basically. And for the victim, it could be starvation and a physical shutdown. As a result, their life would be, of course, ended at that point. All these things can happen and do happen. And over a period of years, yes, I've seen many people who have passed during the actual ritual, both not only the victim, but people that are in the same room, in the ritual room, and they are witnessing everything firsthand, and they are affected. Understand that anyone who's in the ritual room is affected anyway because of the experience. The experience is so it's so traumatic and so shocking and real that you become part of what's going on. And some people who are in the room will actually experience nosebleeds Some people in the room can actually feel things that may fall on them. There was one case where there were actually what appeared to be maggots were falling, not from the ceiling, but from midair, like between the ceiling and the person, and these maggots were just falling down.
Oh.
It was done as a distraction because the demonic will do anything it can to distract the priest as he's performing the ritual, and does every type of dirty trick you could ever even imagine.
Archbishop, what happens to the soul when the person who has been possessed dies during that kind of situation?
That would be in God's hands. I would say that, understand that the demonic darkness, Satan, does not own your soul, does not even have possession of your soul. That soul is, it belongs to God. In fact, we don't even have the right to even try to make the attempt to sell our soul to the devil because it's not really ours to sell. It belongs to God. However, again, based on your intent, especially if it's a real negative towards in favor of the demonic and everything it's suggested, it could be very devastating. But in regards to the spirit is untouched. It's the body that's being attacked, not so much the spirit.
What exactly is a demon, in your opinion?
Well, according to Scripture, it implies that one-third of the angels that fell from heaven when Lucifer decided to revoke against God, and God thrust him out of heaven along with one-third of the angels. The fallen angels are the demons that we see and experience today. All the demons are actually fallen angels that have been thrown out of heaven at the time when Lucifer was thrust out.
One-third of the angels, that seems like a lot, right?
Yeah, it sure does, doesn't it? It's been estimated like 12 legions of angels, I heard, but I don't know who really knows exactly the exact amount. But it is accepted that at least one-third of the angels were actually thrown from heaven.
Once you determine that a person is possessed, how quickly do you try to perform the exorcism?
Well, once we've come to the conclusion that it truly is a valid case of demonic involvement or demonic possession, we try to act almost immediately. However, the process can take anywhere from 3 to 6 months because you have to understand not only is the assessment report being put together, but you're also waiting for reports from the physicians, from the psychiatrists, from their family practitioner who would be producing these reports and sending it to our organization. Of course, they are included in the assessment reports. So, I mean, that could take anywhere from 3 to 6 months. It just depends how fast people are moving in regards to getting this all together.
Once a person has been successfully exorcised, Archbishop, do you see a physical change in them?
Almost immediately. Understand what you're looking at first is you're looking at a person who's possessed by a demonic entity. In appearance, they look like they are dead. They look like a cadaver. Their skin is cold to the touch,
pasty looking,
gray, as if you were to see someone who is deceased. That's exactly what they look like. You can see that there's no life in the body. So it's like a gray, cold to the touch type of appearance, and to the touch. In some cases, the hair can change color, the eyes can come solid, can also start bleeding from the corners of the eyes. The person could regurgitate solid objects, can come from their system. Lots of unexplained things could actually take place. And when I say unexplained things, I'm talking about in regards to the natural world. Because these type of things, they do happen. And when they happen, it's quite alarming, to say the least.
I would guess. My gosh. When the exorcism is taking place, at what point do you know you've won? It's gone.
When the individual takes, and it seems like it would take the person would take a deep inhale deeply and exhale, and then you would see the skin complexion coming back to normal, and then there's an aroma, very sweet smelling, like roses or something very sweet, like perfume, just seems to fill the room, and then the person would basically open his eyes. And then they would start talking or crying or something to that degree. But you could see that they're back.
What does the demon want? What's the bottom line with them?
The demon was, believe it or not, the demon was created for one purpose only. And that is to try to insult God by attacking God's creations. And that would be us. The demon's job is to just simply try to distract us from the love of God and to throw us into total chaos. That could be a number of things, from substance abuse to physical abuse to self-mutilation. It could be a number of things, a multitude of things. The demon can not really take your life, but he will force you to take your own life. It will try to drive you into a point where you feel you must commit suicide and get out of your situation. And the demon would cause the actions to make you feel that you're helplessly in a state of chaos. And as a result, anything could happen.
If one does not get possessed, what are we doing right to keep these demons away from us?
I think that everyone, and I mean everyone, who is alive and who has been alive since the beginning of time, have been touched by the demonic to a certain degree. Mostly demonic oppression. Bad behavior, cannot come from something that God has created. Bad behavior has to come from just the opposite, just from the darkness itself, which would, of course, represent Satan. And all of his demons. So as a result, any bad behavior or self-destructive behavior can be tied tied into the powers of the darkness. And of course, we know that doesn't come from God.
These fallen angels that the Bible talks about that have now become demons. What's their bottom line here? What do they want? Are they do they want the soul? Do they want the individual to die? What, or do they just want to inhabit a body? What do they want?
They are trying to protest and insult and do injury to God by insulting and attacking God's creation, which is of course man. And as a result, they will do anything and everything they can, not because they want to hurt an individual, but rather they want to hurt God. So they do this by attacking us and the human mankind. And as a result, all types of horrible things can happen. And they do it, their whole intention in terms of doing this is to insult God and to try to insult them any way they can, and this is how they get back in regards to some type of vengeance in regards to when they were pushed out of heaven and became fallen angels.
Do they still report to Satan?
Oh yeah, they're just foot soldiers, and there are different ranks too. There are different ranks of demons, but as a result, they all have the one source, the one general, if you will, and that would be Satan himself.
Why hasn't God just raised his arms, Archbishop, and wiped out all these demons in one swoop?
He can, but you see, He's given us this thing called free will, and he allows us to make our own decisions in regards to what we should do, how we should live our lives. You know, we have that intelligence in regards to freedom of choice. So we can either live a good life or be open to all the negative influences that this world has to offer. And as a result, that's exactly what happens.
All right, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment with Archbishop Ron Feil-Enright and take phone calls, questions about exorcisms. Perhaps you've got a story you want to share as well. His book is called Exorcist Secret Journal. As he said, he's worked on it for 40 years, and he's got some incredible information in there. The subtitle tells you everything: Concealed Cases of Diabolical Activities and Demonic Possession. And his website is called orderofexorcists.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. Back with your calls in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.